from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our next hour, first we meet Oakland-based graphic novelist Gene Luen Yang, nominated for a National Book Award twice for his Asian identity graphic novels, and then we'll spend a half hour with Berkeley physicist Carl Haber, who restored the voice of Alexander Graham Bell. The voice of Alexander Graham Bell, restored by Carl Haber, and he's a recipient recently of a MacArthur Genius Award for his work in rediscovering and bringing back and preserving sound. He'll join us next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Gene Luen Yang became the first graphic novelist nominated for a National Book Award back in 2006 for American-Born Chinese, a story about an Asian-American boy's struggle to assimilate in San Francisco. Now he's been nominated again for Boxers and Saints, a set of books about China's Boxer Rebellion, and the Oakland resident talks about his work with us this hour, including his latest work, and quest to create a new Asian-American comic superhero. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you, and congratulations on the National Book Award nominations. I mean, that's quite an honor, particularly for graphic novelists, because they kind of tend to ignore you guys, don't they?
Not anymore.
Until recently, I should say. Yeah,
I feel very, very lucky to be involved in comics right now. I really feel like we're going through something of an American comics renaissance, where many of the best graphic novels that have ever been produced in this country are being produced right now. And in terms of the National Book Award nominations, I really feel like I am sitting on the shoulders of these giants. There are, cartoonists like Art Spiegelman and the Hernandez brothers and Linda Barry, who've really, with their work over the last few decades, they've really created this category in people's minds of comics that can deal with literary topics. And I really feel like they're the ones. Cartoonists like them are the ones who've pushed the medium forward and shown people that it can be taken seriously.
I was even thinking about Will Eisner and some of the others that Michael Chabon brought to our attention in Cavalier and Clay. And you've been drawing comics since fifth grade.
I have. I took a break in junior high because a friend of mine who's much cooler than me told me that if I kept being involved in comics, I would never get a girlfriend. But then the girlfriend thing didn't work out, and I went back to comics towards the end of high school.
So you more of a ladies' man now with the comics?
I don't know if I'm more of a ladies' man. I'm married, so it worked out with at least one girl.
Well, it worked out. I'm glad. And let's talk about Boxers and Saints. It's two volumes, and they're two parallel stories. And you actually did a good deal of assiduous research in terms of the Boxer Rebellion and finding out about, its role in history, and came at it from a couple of different vantage points, because there's a very different interpretation of the Boxer Rebellion if you're looking at it from today's China than you would be looking at it, say, from, a Chinese-American perspective.
Yeah, I first became interested in the Boxer Rebellion in the year 2000. I grew up in a Chinese-American Catholic church, and in the year 2000, Pope John Paul II canonized a group of Chinese saints. My home church was incredibly excited about this because this was the very first time that this deeply Western church had acknowledged Chinese citizens in this way. Well, I looked into the lives of a lot of these saints, and I discovered that many of them were martyred during the Boxer Rebellion. And in fact, their canonization was controversial. The Chinese government, shortly after the Vatican's announcement, issued this letter of protest saying that
they were traitors, I think.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. That these canonized saints were traitors to the Chinese culture. And the more I learned about the Boxer Rebellion, the more I felt like it embodied this tension between Eastern and Western culture that I felt from time to time within my own life.
And also the division perhaps between Chinese culture and Christianity.
Yeah, I think so. When growing up at that Chinese American Catholic church, whenever folks were talking about God and Jesus, they were doing it in Chinese. So for me, growing up, Chinese culture and this Western faith kind of fit together like Legos. The way we celebrated, the Day of the Dead was very Chinese. It was basically the same way the Chinese have been honoring their ancestors for centuries. It was only as I got older that I realized that there's been this historical tension between these two things, embodied by the Boxer Rebellion.
And you could make the boxers into heroes, I suppose. This wouldn't go over very well with the Chinese government either, would it?
Well, I think the boxers have gone through a bunch of different phases. You know, immediately after the Boxer Rebellion, after they were defeated, they were seen as these rubes, as these, you know, these superstitious simpletons that had been taken in by these strange spiritual beliefs. And then as things went on, you know, at the beginning of the communist revolution, they were recast by Mao as these patriots who used traditional Chinese stories to defend their culture. And nowadays, it seems like most scholars, both in the East and in the West, see them as complex characters, as complex figures, as figures who are both tragic and also have this deeply understandable patriotic root.
Which is what you wanted to get at.
Yeah, it? Yeah. I think the more I read about the Boxer Rebellion, the more conflicted I felt about it. And that's why the project came out in two books. The two books take the opposing sides of the war. One of the books has the boxers as the protagonists, and they're the antagonists in the other book.
And it seems like through your work, and this includes work that you're doing now, there's this kind of search for, well, Asian American identity, obviously, but all Chinese American identity and Chinese identity, but also finding a hero. And I had alluded to the fact that you're working on a new superhero, right?
I am. He's not a new superhero. He's actually
well, he goes back to Green Turtle.
Yeah, yeah, he's a new interpretation of an old superhero.
Yeah, let's talk about that. This is Chu Hing who invented that?
That's right. That's right. So in the 1940s, you know, comics was going through its golden age. American comics was going through its golden age. Issues were selling in the millions every month. And all these tiny little fly-by-night publishers would pop up and throw as many characters as they could out at the public to see what would stick. So during this time, a Chinese-American artist named Chu Hing, who was one of the first Asian Americans to be working in the American comic book industry, came up with this hero called Green Turtle. And the rumor is that Chu Hing wanted the Green Turtle to be a Chinese American, but his publishers didn't think that would fly. So if you look at these original Chu Hing stories, they were published in this series called Blazing Comics. The hero almost always has his face away from the camera. All you could see is his cape. And then when he is turned around, his face is usually covered by a shadow or a piece of furniture or somebody else's head. So the rumor is he did this so that he could, the artist did this so that he could imagine his hero as he originally intended, as a Chinese American.
Now you said it was just a rumor. I thought I'd read that Rural Home Publishers wouldn't let the creator make him Chinese. This is just rumor?
Yeah, you know, I've never been able to get it confirmed. I've talked to people who were pretty involved in Golden Age comics, but a lot of that is hearsay.
So apocryphal, I've never been able
to,
maybe?
Yeah, it's apocryphal. It's apocryphal. But I found it so intriguing that I wanted to do a project about it. So I'm working with this amazing Singaporean artist named Sunny Liu, and together we're firmly establishing the Green Turtle as a Chinese-American superhero.
That's about time. I mean, you know, you think about all those characters. Even Charlie Chan, it was played by a Caucasian. I mean, they couldn't let Chinese play those roles for so long in major films as well as stage productions and so forth. So what you're doing is really kind of changing this embedded culture that's existed for so long. And you're also involved in the Nickelodeon cartoon, which some listeners may be familiar with, Avatar: The Last Airbender.
That's right. I was a huge fan of Avatar: The Last Airbender when it was airing. It aired from 2005 to 2008. It's created by these two American cartoonists named Brian Konietzko and Mike DiMartino. And in my mind, Avatar: Last Airbender is probably the best written American cartoon series ever produced. It's just amazing what they were able to do in this show. So later, when Nickelodeon asked Dark Horse Comics to create a comic book continuation of the series that ended in 2008, one of the editors asked me if I'd be willing to write it, and I jumped at the chance. It's been amazing to be involved in this world, in the world of the Airbender.
And the world of Nickelodeon.
And the world of Nickelodeon, that's right.
Gene Luen Yang, our guest this hour, two-time nominee for National Book Award for his graphic novels. He became the first graphic novelist actually to be nominated for a National Book Award back in 2006 for American-born Chinese. And so what I'd like to do is open the phone lines now and particularly find out from listeners, are you into graphic novels? You may, in fact, be familiar with Gene's work, but a broader question, how much do you accept graphic novels? How much do you like them? We used to read classic comic books when I was a kid, and I did a textbook with Maggie Sokolik called Sound Ideas, and we decided to have a whole section on graphic novels. We thought the time had definitely come for them, but how much are they a part of your life, and how much do you really like graphic novels, or do you read them at all? Let me know by calling us. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. Also an opportunity for you to talk with a leading graphic novelist who's here with us, Gene Luen Yang, two-time, as I said, nominee for a National Book Award. We also welcome your emails, and you can email us, forum at kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's at @kqedforum. Let me read a couple of web comments, in fact, that are coming in. Our Craig writes, what's the connection, if any, between superhero literature such as comic books and movies and the epidemic of narcissism in our culture? Boy, there's a heavy-duty question right to begin with. What do you think, Gene?
You know, I've never really considered that question. But my feeling is that, you know, superheroes at the root are this this idea that when you have extraordinary powers, you use them for other people. So my feeling is that superheroes are an archetype of selflessness, it's like that really famous Spider-Man quote, with great power comes great responsibility. I really feel like superheroes are an expression of that. I do think that there are certain superhero books these days that are more narcissistic in nature, but I don't think that's where the roots of the genre are.
You come at this in terms of identity being linked to power, really, don't you?
Sure. I think superheroes are iconic in the fact that they dress up as who they are. They're an embodiment of an identity.
Well, let me go another couple of questions from the web. T.H. Lucy asks, first of all, how much, if at all, was your ABC book influenced by Will Eisner's epic comic book, A Contract with God trilogy, dealing with Jewish immigrants' assimilation in the Bronx? And was Eisner's later life rewrite of Dickens' Jewish Fagin character an invitation to dive into historical fiction?
I think I'm very deeply influenced by Will Eisner. I think almost anybody who
any graphic novel
is, yeah, any graphic novels working today in America is influenced in some way. I mean, even the term graphic novel was popularized by Will Eisner, right? So I think what Eisner did was he set the tone for naturalistic fiction. And even though I work in magical realism, I think that my work is probably closer to what he did with A Contract with God than it is to superheroes.
When you say magical realism, are you thinking of Marquez and Latin writers? Are you thinking more about Rushdie or Toni Morrison?
I'm thinking about the fact that magic monkeys show up in my comics.
You have no control over them, right? Just like poor Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz.
That's right.
The same listener wants to know, are you still a Catholic? And if so, what's your take on evangelical Christian faith within the Chinese-American community? Is a radical message of Christ pulling the Chinese-American community forward, or is it being used as it often is in other groups, or as Confucian philosophy was historically manipulated within China as a means to hinder questioning the status quo?
That's a pretty deep question, too. I am still a practicing Catholic. I think like most religious adults, I did go through a period of doubt when I was in college and eventually made the decision to embrace my childhood faith as my own. I do have a lot of Asian American friends who are converts to different flavors of Christianity, and I've always wondered why that is. So here's my theory as to why a lot of Asian Americans convert to Christianity. Certainly not all of them, but they're a significant number. I think that within the Western faiths, there's this idea of a divine will, that somebody intended you to be who you are. I think a lot of Asian Americans, we struggle with not feeling completely at home in American culture and not feeling completely at home in Asian culture. So for people who are caught in between cultures like that, this idea of divine will, of intention behind your identity, can be a powerful one. So I think that might be part of part of the reason why a lot of Asian Americans convert to Christianity. As for its effects, I don't know. I think looking at the people who I know personally, I do think it plays out in really different ways. For a lot of them, I would argue that Christianity has been a very fruitful force. You know, historically speaking, in America, a lot of the Christian churches, especially those in Asian and Asian American communities like Chinatown, have served as hubs for cultural preservation. That was certainly true of the Chinese American Catholic Church that I grew up in. You know, much of the church was centered around preserving Chinese traditions and Chinese customs for the future generations.
Well, it's in your work. I mean, there is a kind of analogy of Guanyin and Christ,
the idea
of compassion in your work.
Yeah, I was, Guanyin is the Chinese goddess of mercy. And years ago, I went to the Asian Art Museum in San Francisco, and I saw this old, centuries-old painting of Guangying, and she was surrounded by this halo of hands. Within each hand was an eye. And in the little description next to this painting, it talked about how, you know, this hand with an eye in it was a symbol of compassion. The hands represented the fact that Guangying was constantly trying to heal suffering, and the eyes represented her constant search for suffering to heal. And it really struck me when I saw this painting how similar the hand with an eye looked to a crucified hand. You know, and there's something universal about that. I didn't touch on it in Boxers and Saints, but this idea of a hand with an eye on it or a hand with a hole in it comes up in a variety of faiths from all different cultures, including Judaism and Islam.
Again, we're talking to Jean Luen Yang, and his work includes graphic novels American Born Chinese and Boxers and Saints, both nominated for National Book Awards. And I think it's safe to say graphic novels have definitely arrived and are here. But let's hear from our listeners. And we begin, Heather, with you. Good morning.
Hi, I'm just calling. I mean, you've touched on how the really exciting topics that graphic novels can cover. And in the classroom, a lot of kids who might not be ready for chapter books from a reading perspective, but are from their intellectual level, they can read books and have the picture clues, but be engaged in the narrative in a way that they might not be ready for in a regular novel. And it really helps kids who need some help reading just get better at it. And by judging, it's just calling it a comic book or something like Tintin. My son learned to read because of Tintin. And now he reads really great authors, but it all started with Tintin. And in the classroom, there's a great place for these graphic novels. I understand you write for adults, but they are really valuable all along the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. I've actually been categorized as young adult, and I've heard that young adult is a flexible enough category that it covers everyone from 13 to 35.
Everybody who describes your work says young adult. So,
But I really appreciate your point. I think that reluctant readers are a great place to use graphic novels. I do think graphic novels offer this visual sophistication where you know, they deserve graphic novels deserve study in and of themselves. But for elementary schools, I think classrooms with reluctant readers are a great place to use comics and graphic novels.
Some of them are really good, though. I mean, you know, the one that I was particularly kind of knocked out by was of Proust's Remembrance of Things Past. I mean, you can take classics like that and render them and actually compress them in a way. It's not the same thing as reading a novel.
No, it's not. It's two different
either in
media.
Translation or it's an original, but it can be really have quite an impact. Let's hear from another listener. Yanan, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations, Mr. Yang, on your nomination. And Michael, I've always been your big fan, and I just wanted to let you know I moved from China to U.S., and the Forum is the platform that I got to know American culture and American people. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. I have a question regarding not the imaginary world with superheroes, but in reality, how the Chinese American survive or thrive or even survive. As you might have heard recently, Jimmy Kimmel on his late night show led a group of innocent children discussing about the government shutdown and deficit. One 6-year-old boy shouted out, "Let's go to China and kill all the Chinese." Jimmy Kimmel, instead of stopping him, smiled and said, "Oh, interesting idea." And ABC, instead of stopping that show, broadcasted the whole show to the entire country and let us, including the Chinese American, hear the laughing and smiling and the people commenting, "Shall we allow the Chinese to live?" I wanted to hear a comment from both of you, because a lot of Chinese Americans, starting from today, they're going to protest in front of ABC buildings in the major cities to protest.
Well, I can give you a quick comment. I think it's loathsome and unacceptable and unconscionable, especially that he didn't respond in a more forthright way. But Gene, you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, these sorts of incidents pop up again and again, and they're always just horrible. And they always, I think they always emphasize the foreignness of Asian Americans. You know, we can be here for generations and generations, and simply because of
these nighttime talk show hosts, though, are essentially clowns. I mean, I don't sound that disparaging, but you know, I mean, that's really their role. I got really angry once at Jay Leno because he didn't take something serious that I thought he should have, but you know, people kept saying to me, "Well, that's not what he does," you know. But this kind of stuff is really inexcusable. It just lets that kind of thing go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you know, the protests are one way of responding. But I also think maybe even more important way is for us to tell our own stories. I really think storytelling is a wonderful way to bridge cultures. It's a wonderful way of getting other people to see your view and also to see, you know, other people's points of view as well.
And Yanan, thank you for calling and for your kind words. And Erlinda asks you, Gene, what do you think of Dim Sum Warriors, the graphic superhero novels?
Dim Sum Warriors is great. My kids love that series. So it's a series featuring these cartoon characters that have you know, dim sum as heads, and it's really built. The stories are really built to teach Chinese to English speakers and to teach English to Chinese speakers. It's a wonderful series, beautifully illustrated.
More of your calls. Vlad joins us. Good morning, Vlad.
Good morning. I just wanted to say how much of a fan I am of Avatar and Korra. That is, I agree, one of the like best series I've ever seen. And I'm in my 30s, and I love the stuff. And I just wanted to make a quick plug for my favorite graphic novel series that completely changed my life and I believe touches on so many of the topics you're talking about. And that's The Sandman by Neil Gaiman. And I'll take my comments off here. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Gene was nodding and smiling when you said The Sandman.
Yeah. I grew up reading The Sandman. And that was a game changer, right? Out of Sandman grew the Vertigo imprint from DC Comics. And I think Out of Sandman grew a lot of these fantasy horror comics that deal with really adult topics in very sophisticated ways. One of the thrills of my life was meeting Neil Gaiman at a Comic-Con several years ago.
He's become wonderful. A real iconic figure.
Oh, absolutely. And he's also been one of those bridges, right? He's won awards in both the comic book world and in the traditional book world.
Well, I'm getting some emails about graphic novels. Let me just share them. Kate writes, I surprised myself by really falling in love with this genre as an adult. The work of Joe Sacco, Persepolis, and Jonathan Case's Dear Creature are among my favorites. And Michael writes, as a 66-year-old, I've gotten back to graphic novels via the Walking Dead series on TV. I started to read the novels after seeing the show. The novels cover all aspects of the human condition as any current novel. The writing is tight. The emotions and reactions are so well depicted. And Scott asks, has the age of social media and screen time cut into the audience for graphic novels in the same way social media has undercut more traditional print magazines and newspapers? Specifically, did graphic novel sales peak in the 90s, or have they continued to grow as a market and as a genre, both domestically and worldwide? And likewise, do youth today read graphic novels on iPhones? Do they download them into their Kindle?
I have just recently read this essay by a very prominent comics writer named Mark Waid about this very topic. And what he says is that it's been surprising. There's been a lot of speculation that digital media, and specifically digital comics, would cut into print comics. But if you look at the data over the last few years, the exact opposite's been true. Digital comics has grown drastically. You know, Comixology, which is an iPhone and Android app, is one of the top-selling apps and has been for years. But at the same time, print comics has actually grown. It hasn't grown as quickly as digital comics have, but it has grown. So it seems like digital comics, rather than competing against print comics, actually support the sales of print comics.
Gene, good to have you on. Again, congratulations on your two nominations, and keep the Asian superheroes and Monkey Kings alive for us, will you?
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. It's wonderful to be here.
Gene Luen Yang, award-winning author and graphic artist of many graphic novels, including American Born Chinese and Boxers and Saints, both nominated for a National Book Award. When we return, we're going to find out all about, making old sounds come back to new sounds, and all restoring digitally sounds that may have been, at least in many people's minds, lost. Carl Haber, a new MacArthur Genius Fellow recipient, will join us. I hope you will too. I'm Michael Krasny.